This is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Yeah, welcome here to the Christian War Room, and I think we need to go live as well, because we can then have callers. Call us to come in and to talk about this stuff. I want to talk to you today, second talk about left-wing policies and the weird agenda of the left. Yesterday, or the last talk, we looked at where does it all come from, the left and right, and one was pretty much based on workers, the left, you know, looking at the interests of the laborers. Or after the interests of the laborers. And then the other side was more sort of for the establishment, more keeping or maintaining the status quo, and the left was always looking towards progress or changing things and changing things around in the favor of the worker. And over time, this has changed somewhat. And suddenly we find, maybe 150 years after the Social Democratic Parties or Democrat Parties, whatever you want to call them, after they were sort of kicking off, sort of in the days of Karl Marx and others, that that the agenda is very different to what we have today. I mean, we've got one problem, and that is the anti-establishment, which is very, very strong. And as the establishment has changed, sort of left-wing ideology has pretty much perpetrated all of society, so that even modern right-wing parties sometimes seem to be more left than the left, and left-wing parties, which is sometimes very strange as well, pursue a lot of possibly traditional right-wing policies. We've seen this with Tony Blair, that on one hand, he was Tony Blair was the English Prime Minister. He was a very charismatic sort of guy, and that's not in the Christian sense, but just in the sense that he was very gifted. He was a very good speaker. He came across as somebody who was very much alive, and obviously, like most politicians, he turned up with great promises and great hope, and when he was done, not much really has happened. He has done more wars than the previous people, even though he became the man of peace. And the most sort of bizarre thing that happened was that after he finished, they were calling him to become the peace envoy for the Middle East. Interestingly, after he was done, it really kicked off in the Middle East. And we've got a really big mess, or whatever he did, if he did anything, was a bit of a problem. Okay, I've got a couple of notes here. I'm just going to try and go through those notes and comment them. First of all, the left is today, the left in 2018 has got a very weird agenda. And it's a bit of a problem. Yeah. You can't recognize it anymore. They don't seem to be in favor of the labor people anymore. They don't seem to be in favor of the workforce, but a lot of policies they enforce are actually making the life of the worker a lot harder, because he will have to pay a lot more taxes. He will have to work harder to make ends meet because of some of the policies. So some of the stuff just, and that's pretty much all over. That's in Germany. That's in England. I can see this in the States as well, where some very strange policies, which you would think, why are they doing this? You know, where they open the borders and they've got free trade agreements, which again you would think is the domain of the Republicans. But in doing so, and in supporting this, they're pretty much destroying jobs in the country they're supposed to govern. Yeah. And we've seen this. We've seen this development going on, you know, by reducing protectionism. And then, I mean, it gets even more bizarre. Some of the countries they need to protect themselves from, they actually have got barriers up to make it very difficult to buy products from the other countries. So it's very often a one-sided process where certain countries are, you know, forced on their knees by being used, and yet politicians go along with that. And it makes you think, you know, why do politicians do this? What's in it for them? That they pretty much sell out their own country, the country they're supposed to rule, and they're supposed to, you know, work for the benefit of the country and not for the destruction of the country. And we see this, and we've seen a lot of it in the left going on. Okay, just to summarize this, labor movement in the early days, it was for workers, you know, the factory workers. It was a representation of the labor force. It was the big call was all about social justice, living in dignity. There were trade unions, which were supported by the labor parties or left-wing parties, the trade unions. They would all go together, and if, for example, the factory owner wasn't willing to pay a fair wage, everybody would just lay down the tools. And so the factory owner was forced to enter some sort of negotiations, and it's a little bit of give and take, and then eventually everything was back to normal. Obviously, the factory owner does want to make some money, and he does want his people to work, and the people do want a job, but they want fair pay as well, and so there was always this negotiating process in place. And trade unions. So I'm going to talk about trade unions in a little bit as well. We've got, I call them the squalor fighters, you know, people living in squalor. And that was really a problem beginning of the 20th century, late 19th century, Victorian era. And the labor movement was actually really good in that area. And, you know, credit where credit is due. They were trying to get people out of squalor by making sure that basic needs were met, which maybe some of the other parties weren't too keen in doing so. There are some downsides as well. You know, even in the early days, there's always been a status quo, and the labor movement has always been fighting the status quo. And then sometimes good things as well. So status quo is not necessarily always bad. You know, there are good things as well, and the labor movement has sort of gone against this. Okay, what do we find today? And it's very important to understand what we get today, and where has this labor movement gone to? And one of the shocking things I find is that the left has not really been representing the people they're supposed to be representing, but they were pretty much taking the votes as guaranteed, because you get the scenario where father has been voting for the Labour Party and the son has known all this and political views were made known in the family, and then very often the son carries on voting the Labour Party because that's a party who is there for them. And even though the Labour parties or the Democratic parties or the left-wing parties have moved away from working for the benefit of the worker, it takes a long time to change minds, and takes a long time for people to switch their allegiance to the Labour Party, because originally it stood and it was representing their interests, and then over time that changed. Yeah. And they didn't change. They're still supporting them. And so very often they were leaning on the support their previous generation has earned, and the following generation was just taking this for granted. And it's a very difficult situation. People get complacent, and then things go wrong. Okay, what have we got today? Today we've got a bunch of altruistic people. Another English term for those people is do-gooders. There are people who just want to do good, and the standard they use, and this is where the Christian war room comes in, is not the Bible. It's not the Christian, Judaic, or Judeo-Christian concept of what is good, but it's based on humanism. And humanism is pretty much whatever man decides is good, and we have seen the ways it is turned. Yeah? Today it is good if your child has got so-called gender dysphoria. Yeah? So you pump it full with hormones, you mutilate the child by removing the genitalia and putting puberty blockers in, and you then carry on with all the surgery and all the other bits to align it with the gender the child thought it was. Yeah, that is today good. reality very often is that in the vast majority of the cases, you know, children change their view on this as puberty kicks in anyway. And by that time, a huge amount of damage is done, and a child is being put into a course where it's very difficult to turn back. And if they turn back, they're stuck with a mutilated body. And, you know, the desire of creating a family based on genetic children is being taken away from them because of the society we have today and the status quo that is being pushed by the left agenda. And and so that is sort of partly the altruism which is there, and this is where we get some perverted form of humanism, where people make up their own rules, they decide what is good and what is right, and they do this by consensus. And if anybody opposes their consensus, they are vehemently fought. So they fight them very, very rigidly. And it's a big problem. It's a big, big problem. So what else have we got within the current leftish movement? We've got progressiveness. That's pretty much what it's all about. You know, everything needs to change, move forward. And then we've got another term which comes in, is social reconstruction. So they abhor the concept of the traditional family, and we need to encourage and embrace and celebrate a social reconstruction so that the traditional family is gotten rid of and is replaced with something else. And we find this already sort of in the mid-1800s in Engels, Marx and Engels, Friedrich Engels. He was, Frederick Engels, he was writing in his pamphlet, Principles of Communism, about this deconstruct of the family, where the state is bringing up the children in a collective system. So starts with schooling, and then we've got obviously schooling, feeding, and so on. So parents never get to see their children other than late in the evening, because both parents need to work, and you know, some professionals, they look after the kids and make sure they're well indoctrinated. That is pretty much what Engels expressed. And when you look at Russia and the GDR, like East Germany under communism, they tried to implement this to some extent. They tried to implement this, and they did it. They were quite good at it as well. There's a new embrace. So the new, anything which is new is embraced very often by the left. There's something which is really bizarre, and I haven't seen this before. There's a self-loathing. And I'm not sure what it is. It's like, you know, if you are white and straight and normal, whatever normal is, yeah, it's a big problem. Yeah, if you are disabled, black, a woman, yeah, or something else, then that's good. If you are a white male, it's a big problem. Yeah. It's really bizarre stuff going on, and I've heard this stuff as well. I work as a college lecturer, and in one, I had to be in a meeting where, where I was one of the few males in this meeting, and it was a presentation, so I watched it, and then one of the women spotted it off, and he said, "Oh, white male, middle class," yeah, and. And I thought, pardon, yeah, what's going on here? Yeah, is this okay? You know, you can badmouth men, white men, without a problem, and that's perfectly okay. If and it's happened as well. Somebody made a public joke about black people, and the guy was sacked straight away. So same organization, same thing, and you see what is going on here. But this is the left, okay? This is the left which is sort of pushing this weird agenda. It is anti-establishment, so whatever is established, you know, is got to be criticized and gotten rid of. It's anti-authoritarian, and it's quite interesting as well. But yet, on the other side, they've got their own authority. If you dare to challenge whatever their ideas are, you tend to be in trouble. And the typical thing is you're immediately considered to be a right-wing, a Nazi, a fascist, or something like that. That is sort of the propaganda they spout out, and which you get straight away. And it's a bit, it's interesting as well what I've seen in America. When somebody was openly a Trump supporter, that these people were getting attacked and people got really irate about this. When Obama came in, that wasn't really the case. And there were a lot of people who didn't like the guy. Yeah. But, okay, you know, he got voted in, you know. So you live with it, you deal with it, and that's it. But over there, it was almost like, if you supported him, it's like, you know, you've made a covenant with the devil to murder everybody around you. Something like that. That was sort of a really bizarre thing. I've never seen, I think, in politics in the West. I've seen it in third world countries, but not in the West, where people got so irate and even violent about politics and politicians. It's interesting as well that the left seems to be anti-violence and anti-war, but it's a very hypocritical thing. You find that there is a lot of violence. There was a G8 meeting. Was it G7 or G8? I'm not sure. Anyway, one of those meetings in Hamburg. And they had big problems because they knew that a lot of protesters were coming. And again, there's nothing wrong with protesting. I'm all for free speech and, you know, expressing yourself. But I'm against violence. I don't like violence either. You know, surely you don't need to enforce your opinion on somebody else through fear and threats. And yet that's what they were doing. They were pretty much thrashing a whole neighborhood, which was near the venue where the conference was held. And the big problems. From miles away, you could see the smoke columns going up from cars that were set alight. And these were cars of just ordinary citizens who had nothing to do with this, who just happened to live in this area where these guys started demonstrating. Yeah. So they're anti-war, and yet, you know, we've seen this with the left as well. Obama had his wars. In England as well, when the left was in power, there were quite a few wars which were carried on. They seem to be anti-free speech, and that is the whole thing about hate speech. And they say, you know, the slogan is free speech cannot be hate speech, or hate speech is not free speech, or something like that. And again, my point is free speech is free speech. You should be allowed to say what you want. I mean, you don't need to offend people directly, or let's use not the term offend, because I think this term has been abused to a huge extent. You don't need to insult people, but you know, you should be able to talk about actions people do. You should be able to have a judgment, personal judgment on the actions they do. You should be able to discuss and to assess it without fear of prosecution. And that is gone away in many countries. There's a lot of laws have been put out, and as soon as something can be construed as hate speech, I was looking at some of the legislation in Germany, and you know, with Facebook, internet, all this stuff, which you know, where people say nasty stuff. And no, the thing now is not sort of what is hate speech, and it's down to the person who feels offended. Yeah. So if you talk to me and you say that brown cats are not as nice as black cats, for example, yeah, I could be very much offended because my cat happens to be tabby and mostly brown. Yeah. And at that point, if you go by the letter of the law, I could take you to court and I could I could say I'm really offended because, you know, so-and-so said that brown cats or tabby cats are really nasty or not very nice, you know, or ugly, maybe. Yeah. And black cats are beautiful, but brown cats or tabby cats are ugly. I'm sure it would be thrown out of court, but as the law stands, yeah, and maybe the judge is, you know, he's got a brown cut himself and he will not throw it out of court. There could be serious consequences, but this is how far it's gone. And obviously, I don't think it's, I'm just putting this example out of the blue, but you can imagine, you know, if you start standing up and you start talking about, for example, that Jesus said of himself that he is the only way and that nobody comes to God except through him. And then you talk about Islam. Islam says that God has no son. But the Bible is very clear that Jesus is the Son of God. Islam says that Jesus didn't die on the cross, but somebody else died instead of him. Christianity says that he did die on the cross and that he shed his blood for you. And unless you accept it, you will not see the kingdom of God. If you don't believe Jesus, you will die in your sins and you will go to hell. And again, very contradictory. So you have to make a decision, either Quran or Bible. I say it's a Bible. Quran is a lie. Doesn't make any sense either. Why should God deceive people for 600 years and, you know, crucify his prophet and then suddenly tell everybody, oh, by the way, he wasn't my son and he didn't die on the cross. Yeah, but I was just kidding for 600 years. That is pretty much what the Quran is saying. And again, this could be construed as hate speech, and it doesn't take, fortunately, I'm not in Germany, so I assume I'm not under this legislation, but it could be construed in this way, and it could be, you know, turned into a court case, and I'm sure that many Muslims would just love to have this opportunity to shut up anybody who dares to challenge their view of life or their view of God. Okay, the left again, you know, this is all stuff that is coming from the left. The left has got a war on free speech called hate speech. They want to have control. They want to control society and have controls all over. Let me talk a little bit about the issues which we've got with the left. The first issue is white privilege, and there's this concept of guilt as far as white people are concerned. I'm not. I don't think I'm a racist. I don't think I am. I have got a lot of friends who are not white, but I don't see a problem with being white. Yeah. And I don't think that we've got, or I've had great privileges. If I go through my life just on an anecdotal basis, it's the contrary. I didn't have lots of privileges. I was done hard by pretty much throughout my whole career, because when I was looking for jobs, I either hit a crisis or there were too many of us around and I couldn't study what I wanted to study. That's pretty much the story of my life. I mean, some people, they just fall on their feet and everything just falls into their lap. Didn't happen for me. So I don't believe in this white privilege bloody blah stuff. Yeah. And then the next one is diversity welcome. And again, what is diversity? We've got feminism, which is embraced, and feminism is pretty much anti-men today, you know, very often. And some of the stuff you hear from extreme feminists is quite concerning as well, and you're not quite sure what is a worldview, what do they really want. Obviously, they don't want equality. They want something else. They want dominance. Yeah. But dominance on some very weird terms. They want to turn women into men and men into women, something like that. That is sometimes the impression you get. We haven't got time to go into this, but it would be important as well. Now, I believe in a Christian concept. I believe in the Judeo-Christian version. And as far as feminism is concerned, women are very different to men. Men are very different to men, to women. Men need to be good men. Women need to be good women. In Christ, we are equal. We both have different different roles and different strengths and weaknesses. And as we come together as man and woman, and we commit to one another, and we stay together for our lives, and we bring up children in our care, and we do this to the best of our ability, that's what I find works best. And society has proven this over thousands of years that it works best. Obviously, there's always abuse. There's always stuff that goes wrong. And you know, to highlight those stuff, those things which go wrong, where one side is getting oppressed by the other, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm all for it. Where people abuse their position, their role, and they don't give the responsibility, I'm all for it. But whatever is happening with feminism and the left's support for it is very, very, very damaging. It's anti-authoritarian as well, and again, we've got big problems in the negation of any authority. Authority is a part of life. It comes from being little to the day you die, and then ultimately you're facing the ultimate authority, which is God. And one day you're going to stand before God, and your knee will bow before the creator of the heavens and the earth, and it's either for your salvation or for your condemnation. And it's important to realize this. Now, obviously, as far as the left is concerned, as far as the altruism is concerned, the humanism is concerned, there is no God. There is an adherence to dialectic materialism. So we've got the Hegelian concepts which are there. We have got a lot of crazy ideas which are there. Man is a measure of all things. And we're going to harvest whatever they go for. Last word on the trade unions as well. We've had some crazy stuff going on here in England. I remember sort of when I first came here, the miners' strike was still on, and there was some bizarre stuff going on that whenever the miners went on strike, the power plants didn't have enough coal and the lights went out in the country, and there was big political pressure. And then suddenly, once they realized they had this power to just turn the lights out in the country, they went on strike for pretty much anything which had nothing to do with their working conditions. So, for example, the cloth makers, in different town, they wanted higher wages, and the miners went on strike. This is sort of the craziness which went on. Or, you know, some political decisions were made, and again, the miners went on strike. I was looking at the trade union as well. I mean, I believe in the concept of the trade union. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's as long as it's not, if it's based on negotiation and on, representing interests. But when I sort of saw what was going on inside, that you had blatant support for one political party who, like in the profession I was in, did nothing but decimate working conditions because they had to, had all these big spending projects and they had to save money somewhere. So, the traditional supporter base, which was pretty much my profession, they were just, because they could rely on the support anyway, they were just decimating them. It's really, really bizarre. So wages went down, working conditions went down, hours went up and everything. The other thing which really disturbed me when I looked at that was all the other things. So it was like the whole CND and sort of the anti-nuclear movement, and then you had all sorts of minority representatives, which there wasn't really a problem. I mean, people of any race, creed, or color, at least in my profession, were pretty much recognized. And if anything, they were overrepresented. Yeah. There wasn't really a problem with no women in the boardroom, or ethnic minorities not embracing the profession. Nothing at all. If anything, it was the other way around. It was that there was an over-representation of minorities in the country. Okay, anyway, this just putting to one side, what you find is that sometimes, trade unions, they've gone over and beyond themselves, and they were suddenly pursuing things which have got a political aim but are not necessarily meant for the benefit of the worker. They are thought to represent. Okay, we're coming to the end. What is the conclusion of all this? The conclusion is that politics without God is not going to work. Politics where you are anti-God, where you embrace a humanistic ethos, where man is the measure of all things, is doomed to fail. And as Christians, we need to understand this. We need to be aware of this. And we need to also lobby politicians as far as we can. And in America, it would be congressmen, senators, or whatever. In Germany, parliamentarians. We need to lobby them and to urge them to stand for Christian values and to embrace them. And make a point of it as well, because I'm sure very few people do it these days. All we have found is that the established churches, very often they've aligned themselves with the world in the hope of being more attractive to the world. And the few Orthodox Christians, the remnant that's left that is sticking to the Bible, has pretty much given up. We can't. We need to carry on. We are coming to the end of our half hour. God bless, and bye-bye here from the Christian War Room.